do. The next thing is pay with a credit card. People, a lot of people don't realize that they have huge consumer protections by paying with their credit card. And this does not mean a debit card. Debit cards don't necessarily give you the same level of legal protection. They may, but they're not guaranteed to.
Right.
A credit card always does. And basically, if you're dissatisfied with goods or services you purchase or there's something hinky going on, you always have an excellent route to go to your credit card company to say, stop that charge, I want the money back, and they'll step up to bat. And I'll give you an example of where that really helped out. We've always had a policy where we only take payments by credit card for this reason. When Renaissance Cruises went out of business after September 11th,
right.
People who paid with credit cards, all of our customers who paid with their credit cards, immediately got all their money back from the credit card company, even though they were outside of that federally mandated 60-day window. If the charge is within 60 days, that's what the Fair Credit Billing Act says when you have the most rights. The point being that Visa, MasterCard, and American Express, even outside of that legally mandated 60-day window, for people who had purchased more than 60 days in the past, they stepped right up and gave them their money back, no questions asked.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
Well, now, you would think, I don't know, if I were the tour leader or the person that put this group together or handling this group for the church, I would probably go to the I'd probably go to the cruise line just to make sure everything is in order. But then, of course, I've been around the industry so long, it would be a natural for me, but probably not for someone that isn't familiar with it.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, that's something else that I suggest, is to verify in advance that the credit card charge you're going to be placing is actually processed by the travel provider, not the travel agency.
Right.
The travel agency has no reason to be sitting on your money.
Yep.
And so you want to either call your credit card company or check your bill online or just check your bill when you get it to make sure that the charge came through from the travel provider, for example, the cruise line in our case.
Right.
And again, as you said, Roy, if the individual also can call the cruise line directly and say, hey, I want to confirm I have this reservation, that this money's on file, and it's all good, and the cruise line or other travel provider will be happy to tell you so.
Yeah, it's terrible to think that there are some scrupulous people out there that will take advantage of this sort of thing, and especially here it is with a church group, no less. I mean,
oh, I know.
I'd be a little worried about being struck by lightning here.
Yeah, I think that these people are in grave jeopardy. I agree.
Yeah.
There are a number of this. Alexander Analik, who we have on from time to time, is a travel attorney.
Sure.
He, in fact, is representing the case with, is it the one out of Hawaii, isn't it, Marcus?
Yeah, yeah. That was a similar episode where a group were booked and the agency pocketed the dough. And, or the agent, as opposed to the agent pocketed the dough. And that's going to be interesting to see what happens. But Alexander's been in this for a long time and written a couple of good books about it as well. And so I'm sure he'll get it resolved. Evan, always great to have you back, and always great to have you on, and you always have such great advice for our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Before you go away, were there any more tips after I cut you off here?
Oh, actually, no. Well, there was just one more that is worthwhile. If people who want to buy travel insurance,
right.
This we can't get into just in one sentence, but I'll give a little hint, which is look into what you're buying. There are advantages to buying travel insurance from the travel provider, like the cruise line, or through a third party.
Right.
But the disadvantage of buying your travel insurance through the cruise line or other travel provider is that it won't cover you in case that organization goes bankrupt. Thankfully, a very rare event, but that is one big advantage that third-party travel insurance gets you. And if you're going with perhaps a tiny cruise line, one that you've not heard of, or somebody else, third-party travel insurance may be a very good idea in case you're not sure of that company's finances.
Absolutely.
Now, this is advice we always give, but is it easy? How would you go about finding a reputable travel insurance company?
Well, I guess, how would I go about finding it? Well, that's interesting. I mean, I guess I would find somebody whose advice that I really rely on. I mean, in our case, there are a number of different ones out there who are all good.
Right.
And we could talk about that in the future.
Yeah, we've actually had Travel Guard on the program, and that's a legitimate one that's been around for a long time. So.
Well, it is. Travel Guard is the one that we use right now. We've had great luck with them, and they're very reputable and very good. Now, Travel Guard is definitely a good one of several good choices.
Yeah.
Do you have these on your website as recommendations that... When you suggest travel insurance, is there a link to it, or do you? How does one make that arrangement?
Yeah, what happens is whenever we work with somebody, we recommend travel insurance. If they don't buy it, then we put the information on their first confirmation, pointing them at the information on the travel insurance. They can read about it themselves and make themselves aware of what they're getting, and if they choose not to get it, what they're not getting.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Thank you, Evan. That was terrific.
Well, sorry we ran a little long today.
Hey, not a problem. Always good to have you.
Talk to you next week. Next week we're doing a pre-recorded show, so we're going to skip a week.
Okay. All right. I'll take a vacation week.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Evan. Well, let's have a look at some of the top travel industry stories in the news this week, which is brought to you in part by USA 3000 Airlines, offering low-cost fares from St. Petersburg, Fort Myers, and Fort Lauderdale to Chicago O'Hare, Cleveland, Newark, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and isn't it time you tried USA 3000?
Well, you know, one thing about USA 3000, they seem to have a lot better on-time record than some of them we're reading about.
Absolutely.
Alaska Airlines is kind of out there, aren't they, Mark?
They sure are. They've been a sorry state of affairs. They've got the worst, I believe, on time, other than Air Tran. And Air Tran has a very, very bad one, but only on one flight. They've never been able to get that flight on time.
Well, it seems that Alaska Airlines has plunged to 49.8% for the month, and I don't know, that's not a very good record. And you know, there are a number of reasons. They're talking about hiring new, you know, additional people at the gates and ground support equipment, ground support employees. But you know, to me, it's usually in the scheduling. And if you schedule your flights too close, you're gonna end up with delays.
Or you schedule your flights at peak times, you're gonna end up with delays.
That's exactly right.
Especially in the larger airports.
Especially in Atlanta.
Yeah. Every flight goes through Atlanta, I think.
Well, go ahead.
A federal court on Tuesday cleared the way for unsecured creditors at U.S. Airways to vote on a plan by an investor group to combine the bankrupt carrier with America West Airlines. Judge Stephen Mitchell of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Eastern District of Virginia also set September 15th as the date for a hearing on whether the court should confirm the merger that would create the nation's fifth biggest airline. U.S. Airways hopes to leave the court protection and close on the merger with more than $1.5 billion in late September or early October. So that's the news with U.S. Airways. Continental is adding
Houston Punta Cana this winter. That's kind of interesting because Punta Cana has been for years a little-known destination in the Dominican Republic, but it's growing and growing. And the flights were going to depart to Houston at 1:30 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays, arriving in Punta Cana at 7:35 p.m. And it's good to know that they're getting – everything's been going out of Miami to the Caribbean, and now they're building out into the West Coast, and I think that's important because the West Coast has always been a big market, and they've had to connect through Miami, which is – you know, not a lot of fun if you can get it straight out of your own hometown.
That's true. And, you know, Delta Airlines is expanding their flights into Belize, into Chile, and Costa Rica, and Peru. And they're going to start service into those areas for the upcoming winter season. In October, Delta will add seasonal Saturday-only flights between Atlanta and Lima, Peru, completing its existing daily service in the market. And in November and December, Delta will increase service between Atlanta and Belize City. Belize from Saturday only to a daily service with a Boeing 737-800 aircraft. They're going to add to its daily service a seasonal three times per week flight between Atlanta and San Diego, Chile, using the 767. And then they're going to upgrade flights between Atlanta and Liberia, Costa Rica, from daily Boeing 737 service to daily 757 service. So, all good stuff, all very interesting. Just while we're on the airline news, a bit from over my side of the pond, Qantas Airways said yesterday that it would cut nearly 200 management jobs by September in a three-year cost-cutting plan that remained on track to exceed a $1.5 billion saving by June 2006. So they're really serious about saving some money. Anyway, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to have a very interesting conversation with Linda Springman from Holland America Cruise Lines. Yeah. So stay tuned, and we'll be back real soon.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fare starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, thank you for staying with us, and as promised, we're joined by Linda Springman, who is the Marketing Director for Holland America Cruise Lines. Hey, Linda, thanks for joining us at such an early hour out there on the West Coast. We truly appreciate it. How are you?
Very good, thanks. It's my pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure. Holland America, what a wonderful cruise line, and some great programs out there this year.
Well, you know, besides that, you know, Holland America is probably one of the most popular cruise lines out of the Manatee and Sarasota County. It's a big, big, big market here, and it's a very popular cruise line, as those who are listening are certainly aware. And Linda, if you will, I thought maybe we could go through some of the various programs that Holland America is offering this year. Because on your website, for example, you show the, you know, you have the Signature of Excellence and the Mariners Society. And could you maybe just elaborate a little bit on that for us?
Well, I'd be happy to. Thanks for asking. You talked a little bit about Holland America, and you know we have such an extensive history. We've been sailing in passenger cruising for over 130 years. We have 12 ships with a 13th ship coming out this next spring, the Nordam.
Did you say 130 years?
More than 130 years Holland America's been sailing.
You don't sound that old.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I hope I don't look it either.
But these must have been sailing vessels in those days then, right?
Absolutely.
That's amazing. That's great. I'm sorry. Continue on.
And it's we have, like I said, we'll have 13 ships beginning next year with the addition of the Nordam. We sail to all seven continents on worldwide itineraries from anywhere from 3 to up to about 108-day cruises on our Grand World cruise. And we've been sailing actually cruises out of Tampa since 1982, so we have quite a long history locally there, too.
Right.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, we have our brand new Signature of Excellence initiative that we started last year, and we saw this really as an opportunity to do some enhancements, both product and service related, across our entire fleet, which is a huge undertaking.
Now, I saw there was like a $225 million initiative and a commitment there.
Absolutely, $250 million, and what it means is that each one of our ships, all 12 of them, were pulled out of service at one time or another throughout the year for about nearly 3 weeks each. They go into a dry dock and go through an extensive process that, you know, where there's some hardware types of things enhanced, as well as all the product enhancements, which include things like our brand new Eurotop beds in each of the staterooms, those plush kind of cushy mattresses, which are fantastic, flat-screen TVs in all of the staterooms. We have a brand new culinary arts center across the fleet. It's kind of like you see on the TV shows now, where there's all these show kitchen at sea, basically we call it, where you can do culinary demos. We do 1 hour shows a couple times throughout the cruise, where people can kind of watch the different dishes being created. They can take away recipes, and we even do some hands-on cooking schools, which are really fun too.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful. I was really interested to see that the Going Wild for Salmon feature on the seven Alaskan ships this season, with 50 fresh salmon choices to be offered as entrees and appetizers. that'd be fun to watch.
Absolutely. And I think what's great about the Culinary Arts Center and what you're talking about with Alaska is that we try and theme these things to the destinations we're sailing in. So it's perfect for Alaska that we can kind of feature the salmon. We try and do some things like that in the Caribbean and Mexico and Europe as well.
Right, right.
Now, you also have the Mariner Society for frequent travelers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Mariner Society it's something that we think is really important because we find that when people sail on Holland America, they really do come back, and it feels like home to them. So we have some special programs that we offer to them. We award them points for the number of really cruise days that they sail. We have special communications where we kind of give them some insider views into what's happening here at Holland America, give them advance notice about the new itineraries that may be coming out, new sailings they might want to take in the next year or so. And in some cases, they do get special pricing as well.
Right, and I've found over the years that that you're a frequent traveler that's probably one of your best salespeople.
Absolutely, word of mouth.
Word of mouth is great.
Yeah, now, I guess you told them all about the Staten Dam that's going to be sailing Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pacific this year.
Absolutely. You know what? That's been a new program for us this year, and it's sold incredibly well. Australia and New Zealand is doing quite well. The cruises are beginning either in Auckland and then ending in Sydney or vice versa for 14 days, hitting quite a few ports in New Zealand and Australia as well as Tasmania. And then after the Australia-New Zealand season, the ship will sail up to Asia and do a series of sailings throughout Asia, hitting quite a few different countries along the way.
Japan, China, Korea, and Russia, no less.
Absolutely.
That's a very adventurous undertaking, and great to see you down in my part of the world. I really appreciate that.
And the reason we've expanded to that is you talked about the Mariner Society. Our past guests want to sail with Holland America, but they want to keep, you know, pushing the limit and seeing new places in the world. So we keep offering some more alternatives for them.
Right. Now, there's an important issue that's coming up, not only for the cruise industry, but in general, and that's the new passport requirements. And I think people tend to be a little bit more lax with that with cruising than they do when they're flying somewhere, because we've all taken the Caribbean and Mexico and some of these places for granted. But as you well know, on December 31st, 2007, I think they had moved up, it was originally 2006, that people will require a passport. Can you just touch on that for a moment?
I can, and what we're trying to do is really just educate our customers about what's coming up and making sure that they're aware they need to start planning further ahead for this. But beginning December 31st of 2006, a passport will be required for air and sea travel to or from Mexico and Canada.
Now, is it 2006 or 7?
It's 2006 for Mexico and Canada.
Okay,
it's 2007.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
2007, I think it becomes wider than that.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was 2006, and when I went to your website, I saw 2007, and I didn't have a chance to double check. So maybe they are doing it in stages. You're right.
Yeah.
The website is great, and while Roy's mentioning that, it's hollandamerica.com, and there's under the for book guests heading, there is a wealth of information about baggage allowances and insurance and a whole bunch of stuff, including the information about the passport requirements and so on. And I don't know who does your website, but they did a great job with it.
Thanks very much. I'll pass that along.
Good.
Okay, Linda. Well, I thank you. I'd like to have you back on again maybe when we have a little bit more time and chat about some other issues.
Okay.
Actually, we have another 5 minutes. Why don't we go with it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I kind of lost track of time here.
The kids program, what's it called?
Club Howl.
Club Howl. That's it. Sorry. What sort of age groups and what sort of activities are available for the Club Howl?
Well, we've broken the Club Howl program down into three age groups. We have the ages 3 to 7, where a lot of the programming around that features things like arts and crafts and kind of some group activities really geared towards that age group. Ages 8 through 12. It's a little bit less of the group activity type of thing. We have a kids area where there's like PlayStations and access to internet and karaoke, some more interactive things like that. And then ages 13 through 18 is really our teens program that we've done the most enhancements on lately with our Signature of Excellence program. And what we've done with that is kind of fun. You know how teens really don't want to, they don't want to hang around with the adults. They don't want to associate with the younger kids. So we've created two new areas in our kids area, in our youth area. One is called the Loft, and what it is a kind of a New York style loft where the teens can go hang out on their own and in a real casual environment. The other that is really all of the adults are wanting to take over is called the Oasis, and it's a teens only sun deck out on the top of the ship, and there's hammocks and palm trees and a waterfall. Really a unique area.
Cool. That sounds great.
It sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Yes, I was going to imagine why the adults are trying to take it over.
It should be a kiddie all over again. Just getting back to the Tampa market, what's coming up for this coming season? Is there anything special that you'd like to mention?
Well, there is. I'm glad you asked that because one of our, you know, we have 12 ships and we move them around throughout the world wherever we think the most demand is. And in 2006, we're actually adding a second ship to the Tampa market. What we've been doing traditionally out of Tampa is 7-day Western Caribbean cruises on the Vendome. We have two itineraries to choose from. One is the more traditional Grand Cayman, Jamaica, Costa Maya, or Cozumel itinerary. And then the other one is a little bit more exotic, going to Belize and Guatemala. And we've been alternating it with a few 14-day cruises that get you really down into the deep Southern Caribbean. And starting in 2006, the Rhinedam will be sailing out of Tampa on this exclusive 14-day itinerary.
And this is the one down into South America or Central America?
Yeah, it goes to like Dominica, Barbados, Grenada, down into Venezuela, and then to hits Aruba, Bonaire, and then back up to Grand Cayman.
I think we should sample that one.
Yeah. Sign you up, huh?
Yeah, that the Vendome and the Rhinedam are the ships with more space and fewer passengers.
Absolutely. That's our other niche that we think we have with Holland America is that our ships are all real mid-sized ships. The smallest one is about 700 passengers, and the largest is about 1850. And these ships are 1,250 passengers, really a nice moderate size, which allows us to have a little bit larger staterooms and more space for the guests.
Yeah, and private verandas and all sorts of wonderful things.
Well, I think this new itinerary is great because Dominica and all of those little places are wonderful. And the thing is that so many people have done so many tours to so many of these other destinations that to give them an option to experience some of these. Dominica is kind of a lesser known destination, but wonderful nonetheless. And,
right.
I think that's super. I think it's going to be a very, very popular program.
I'm sure it will.
It exposes people to a little bit different Caribbean. I mean, you've got some variety within the places that you're visiting, from the beaches to the, you know, lush tropical rainforest types of places. So.
Right.
Right. Are you doing an Antarctic tour this year or cruise this year?
Absolutely. We have two this year. We actually have one over the holidays that is very exciting. We just do a couple a year just because the time frame on the Antarctica cruises is so tight.
Yeah.
But it's a 20-day cruise from Rio to Valparaiso, and it goes to Antarctica and is an amazing trip.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely phenomenal.
We have one other Tampa itinerary I just wanted to mention to you. This fall we have, between the Alaska season and Caribbean, we have these trans-canal cruises that go through the Panama Canal. And we actually have one this September coming up that also goes to the Amazon on the way, which has a little bit of space left, but it ends in Tampa, and I thought I'd mention that to you, too.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, that's terrific.
If you have a free 34 days, it should be ideal for you.
Oh, I could flex that off for sure, just to chill out and relax for 34 days. That's unheard of. That just doesn't happen in the world.
We'd have to take the mixer with us and broadcast from the ship.
I'm sure we could arrange.
That would be wonderful. Linda, it's wonderful to have you on the show, and we'd like to chat with you again one of these fine days. And thank you very much for taking the time to join us today.
Super. It's my pleasure.
Okay. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, you're listening to Talk and Travel with Marcus and Ray on the Travel Talk Radio Network. And when we return, Hans Tamamagi will bring us another Destination Canada. And that's a great little article that he has. So that's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to it. Stay tuned. We'll be back real soon.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks. All-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Promise, we're back, and we have Hans Tamamagi, who's a travel environment and science writer, and very interestingly enough, earned his doctorate degree in Australia. Good morning, Hans. How are you?
Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Hans.
Good morning, Roy. It's wonderful to be talking travel with you two gentlemen again.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. We love your articles, and particularly this one. For those that are listening online, if you go to the site ttrn.com and go to Destination Canada and scroll on down to Bears, Birds, and Belugas on the Edge of the Arctic, you'll come across Hans's article. And there's a couple of photos in there that are quite spectacular. And the one that I need to ask you about is this one with the green coming out of the red. As you know, around the world, they've always talked about the green flash after a sunset. And it was in many of the authors have included it in their books. And I'm just wondering, could that be the green flash that you've captured in that photograph?
No, Roy.
What is it?
It's from Northern Lights.
I'm going to have to disappoint you on that one, Roy. That's the Aurora Borealis.
Well, Marcus knew that, of course.
The famous Northern Light.
Yeah. That's really a super photograph. Absolutely beautiful. But you do recall the old green flash that's been talked about many, many years, where you suddenly get that flash of green just as the sunset comes down, but very seldom. It's really a beautiful photo of that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the Aurora Borealis is only one of the many wonderful features of Churchill, Manitoba. And it's quite interesting. They're absolutely, as you say, spectacular to watch, particularly in the winter night sky.
Yep.
The Japanese are starting to flock to Churchill because they believe that the a child conceived under the Northern Lights is going to be particularly intelligent. So there you go, Roy.
Is that right?
The intelligent children, you have to head up there.
Well, the green flash apparently didn't do me much good.
Well, I've not seen the Northern Lights, but obviously I've seen the Southern Lights many times, the Aurora Borealis, and that is phenomenal. Just amazing. It's difficult to describe it to anybody.
Yeah.
Something you have to see. Bears, Birds, and Belugas on the Edge of the Arctic. What a wonderful, creative topic for your article. And tell us a little bit more about Hudson Bay and Churchill.
Well, yeah, I'd be delighted to, because this was one of the most exciting trips that I've ever taken. And it really is one of the most underappreciated places in North America. Churchill, Manitoba really is just like going on a big game safari to the deepest Africa. It's really spectacular.
Right.
Here you are way up north. You just passed the tree line in the Arctic. It's all tundra. And it's very desolate and barren and wild in its own way, but in spite of that, it has terrific wildlife. And let me just very quickly tell you what the key ones are. First of all, it's most famous for polar bears.
Right.
And the polar bears tend to congregate there just before winter, in October and November, as they're congregating ready to go out on the ice as it's freezing on Hudson Bay. But on top of that, as though that wasn't enough just to go up there and see the mightiest carnivores on Earth, they also have two huge herds of caribou, about 400,000 caribou each. And in the spring and the fall, they migrate. So to go up there and see that kind of migration is absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
But actually, I've been saving my favorite to the third one here, and that is that in the summertime, a large group of beluga whales, about 3,000 of them, come and spend the summer in the mouth of the Churchill River, just as it flows into Hudson Bay, and it's bringing warmer water from inland, and I guess the belugas love to sit there and float and live in this warmer water, and that is absolutely unbelievably spectacular. The beluga whales are known as the canaries of the ocean. They really chirp and sing a lot, and they're also very ballet-like in their motion. And when we went out by boat there's hundreds and hundreds of them. And we had a hydrophone down, and we were listening to the chirping. And several of the belugas actually came over and were inspecting and kind of nosing the hydrophone, which is only like 5 feet away from where I was sitting on the boat. And I swear, they looked me right in the eye and spouted the big spume of water up above them and kind of winked at me, and then off they went.
I felt there was a little communication there.
There was.
Well, that's fantastic. You obviously put some great links on your article, and the link for the beluga whales was fascinating, and the photos were great too. So if anybody's browsing through the article, click on the beluga whales link, because it's a doozy, as we say.
One of my dreams, actually, Mark, is to go back there and actually swim with the belugas. You can actually do that. There's, like as I said, there's so many of them in that estuary, and they're very friendly. I didn't have time on my trip, but I really would like to go back and spend about a week studying them and swimming amongst them and getting to know them a lot better.
Yeah, they're not much bigger than a dolphin, are they?
That's right. They're one of the smallest whales going.
Yeah,
I was going to say, because I spent a fair amount of time in the Dominican Republic, and we had the humpbacks there, and of course they're quite large. And to watch them leap out of the water and flip over backwards is really incredible. And getting in swimming with them, I don't know, I might be a little nervous about that, but as long as they're friendly, I guess I'd certainly like to hear that report. We'd like to put a microphone in the water while you're down there so we can
listen to
record that.
You might hear my heart beating, too.
Very quickly.
How big is Churchill, as a town?
Well, Churchill's an interesting place. It's very historic, actually. It was actually founded way back in 1600, as you can imagine, the fur trading post.
Right.
And then they built a really nice fort there. Actually, a very attractive, big stone, thick-walled fort, and was protecting that strategic area with the Churchill River and Hudson Bay.
Right.
But these days it's become a seaport, and it actually acts as one of the few Arctic seaports certainly in North America. It's the only one, but also in the world. And so it's got a population of about 1,100 people.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the seaport freezes over in the wintertime, so things get much quieter.
Right.
So in winter, the population goes way down. In the summer, the population with the tourists in the seaport. And of course, it's the terminus of the railway to bring wheat and minerals and ore to the seaport. So in the summer, it's about the 1,100, maybe even more, with tourism. And in the wintertime, it probably dwindles down to a third of that.
Yes, I can imagine it to be a fairly unfriendly place in the wintertime. Not a lot of daylight and an awful lot of snow and very cold.
Yeah,
the all-terrain vehicles would give way to snowmobiles, I guess.
Exactly. It's a very desolate place, even in the summertime. But the desolation has a certain excitement about it. I mean, it's just like going to Africa, deepest Africa. I mean, it's not necessarily a friendly terrain to a North American who's accustomed to shopping malls. It's the same up there. And in the summertime, people just dash around in these all-terrain vehicles. But everywhere you see parked, these kind of rusting snowmobiles and rusting snow sleds and things that are just waiting for winter to pick up and come into use.
Right. Observing the polar bears, because there are so many there, how is that achieved at a safe distance or in relative safety?
Yeah, good question. They have devised a wonderful way to travel up there for tourists, and they're called tundra buggies.
An amazing-looking vehicle.
Yeah, they're kind of like a large bus, but it's raised up about 6 feet off the ground by these huge tires that are about the size of a person.
Right.
And they have open decks at the usually at the front and back where you can then peruse the terrain, and if you're lucky, see a polar bear. When I was up there, we bounced through. We went first. They took us out quite a distance from town to where these tundra buggies are parked, and even though it wasn't polar bear season, we had a wonderful time just looking at all the bird life. And the desolate terrain, the stunted trees. It's just past the tree line. It's in the permafrost area.
Right.
So it's very different from anything you've seen down south here. And we saw some wonderful birds and cranes and snow geese. But also, at one point, out of the mist loomed this large caribou. He's standing on a bit of a rise in this huge rack of antlers. It was just absolutely magnificent. So these tundra buggies are... just the absolute way to go, a wonderful way to see the terrain and explore it.
What time of year would you suggest our listeners, if they were interested in making a trip like this, what time of year would they plan it?
Yeah, I would certainly say that to see polar bears, you go in October, November. And that's when they start congregating along the coast, and particularly in the Churchill area. But any time in the summer would be good for all the rest of it. Like, I went in July. And I really enjoyed it. That's when the belugas are there. You can see the caribou. You can just enjoy the terrain itself. Well,
and you've got all the migrating birds there, of course, at that time of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. They're terrific bird life.
And what were the temperatures like at that time of year?
You know, it wasn't that cold. In fact, when I was there for the 2 days I was there, we had perfect sunshine. It would have been in the 70s.
Huh.
And it didn't drop down too much at night. But you can't go out at night.
Once the sun is gone, it's...
Well, no, it's not the cold. It's the polar bears.
The bears.
Oh, the bears. You
wander around in the dark. You've got to have good visual.
Otherwise, you become somebody's meal.
Exactly. You don't want to carry a salami around after dark.
Tell us a little bit more about the Prince of Wales Fort.
The Prince of Wales Fort is absolutely magnificent. It's across the river from the town. Across the river, Churchill River, and you have to get there by boat. And so we took a boat across, and when we got there, we actually had an armed guard. Like, it was amazing. So we had a fairly long walk up from the dock to the fort, which is a big, it's five foot thick wall, stone wall.
It's outstanding. It looks amazing in the photos.
And again, because it's up there, there's nobody around. So when you go there, like, I think we had a group of about six to eight people. We were
right.
The only ones there. And we're just wandering around this fort and looking at the cannon, the old cannons, and, the slots that they used to fire through and climbing the ramparts. And all the time we're doing that, the Parks Canada guard was touring, was like an outrider, patrolling around us with his all-terrain vehicle and a shotgun and some other ammunition. To make sure no polar bears came wandering around while we're doing this.
Right, and they probably weren't using ammunition. They were probably using tranquilizing shells, I would think. I don't know.
Again, polar bears, because in the summertime they don't get much food, they eat mostly seals in the winter off the ice, but in the summertime they get quite hungry. So they're very investigative. Now, they're not necessarily threatening, so you're quite right. They can scare them off, and what they actually do is they carry starter's pistols.
Oh, okay.
So they don't have tranquilizers, but they have starter's pistols, and they do get too close. They have heavier
artillery.
With you in a pinch, but hopefully
right. They
can scare them off. And between getting the polar bear to run in one direction, not to run in the other, it should work out.
Yeah. Hans, a great article. Absolutely wonderful. A pleasure, as always, having you on the show. And...
we look forward to the next time.
Yeah, for sure. With our nose pressed against the computer monitor, waiting for the next installment.
Okay. Wonderful chatting with you, gentlemen, and I look forward to speaking to you next month about the Gulf Islands.
Yeah, that's going to be great. We're looking forward to that one.
And that's home for you, right?
That's where I live now, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Hans.
We'll look forward to it. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be joined, of course, by Mr. Johnny Jett, wherever in the world he may be. So stay tuned, and we'll be joined by Johnny Jett real soon.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag.
How are you, Johnny?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Good. We're doing amazingly well, thank you.
Well, not as well as you are, but we're doing well.
I like the new music.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we kind of just, we're experimenting a little bit here and there. Occasionally we miss one. Marcus's finger gets caught with my finger when I push up the wrong button and he's pushing a different one. But other than that, it's working fine.
So where in the world is Johnny Jett today?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
You're in Pennsylvania?
Yep.
In heaven's above.
And I'm at my sister's house. And she just woke me up like a couple hours ago and she says, I got a treat for you. And she went and got me a massage.
Oh, really?
This lady just worked my back and I'm feeling like... I was just snoring 5 minutes ago on the table.
You're not still enjoying the massage, are you?
No.
Oh, okay. So you've been all over the place since we last spoke.
I've been around the world. No, I haven't been around the world. I've been to Europe, been all around the U.S.
Right. Pretty extensive tour of Europe.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Went to a couple of my favorite places, even.
Yeah. So which one's your favorite?
Oh, Geneva and Zermatt.
You know, I was really impressed with Geneva.
Right.
I didn't know what to expect. We were only there for one night, but it was beautiful.
And so clean.
It really is clean, and people are, you know, very good.
You had to hesitate there for a while.
In terms of service. And they are friendly.
Yeah.
Everyone says how the Swiss aren't that friendly, but I mean they're friendly. They weren't like, you know, they want to be your best friend, but you know, they get the job done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, you know, the Swiss always say that they go out and pioneer different places in different countries. For example, when I was down in the Dominican Republic, the Swiss had come over there and they'd build these hotels and they'd say, we'd build them and the Americans would come in and buy them, you know. We'd do all the groundwork. Well, I said, well, that's the American life, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. You guys can build them if you want.
But you had some temperature variations while you were there.
Oh, my gosh. In Geneva, it was like 85 or 82 degrees, and then we took the train to Zermatt.
Right.
And that takes like about 3.5 hours from Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
You got to switch trains. And, you know, it just changed to like 50-something degrees, and I was like, brr. And it got colder.
Right.
That night, it was like 39 degrees.
Right. And did you enjoy Zermatt?
You know what? I'm not really a mountain person. I love islands.
Right.
I was actually a little bit skeptical about going because I have asthma, and it's going to be high up, and, you know.
Right.
It just blew me away.
Yeah.
I mean, it just changed my whole outlook on, like, I'm now kind of a mountain person.
Right.
It's so incredible. You know, there's over 38 peaks that are all above 13,000 feet there.
It's amazing.
And, you know, it's the middle of summer, and there's white caps, and then, of course, there's Matterhorn, which is, like, one of the most famous.
Isn't that amazing to look at?
It really is amazing.
Absolutely awe-inspiring.
And you know what? When you walk through the town, the village, you just look and there's people just standing there staring at it.
Yeah.
That's all they do. They just sit there and stare.
It dominates. And almost every hotel or guest house or lodge or whatever has a balcony that overlooks the Matterhorn.
I I've heard so many things about Zermatt. And, you know, I actually even did a TV show once on the Fine Living Network. They
interviewed
me and they had me talk about Zermatt, which I'd never been to before.
Uh-huh.
And now looking back, like, I did the worst job ever. I had no idea what I was talking about. And now it's just, it's amazing, the place.
Yeah, I mean, you thought it was breathtaking before, but then when you actually saw it, it was a whole different thing. Yeah, you're right.
It really is. It's 14,000 feet high, and I can't believe people climb it. And obviously, a lot of people don't make it because there's a cemetery right behind the church, and the village that has all kinds of, you know, they're all gravestones, and some of them have, you know, ice climbing picks that are on the gravestone. It's just people who try to climb the mountain.
Try to climb the Matterhorn
and make it.
And yeah, I have some quite famous people as well.
I have an uncle who climbed the Matterhorn from New Zealand. He was just he climbs mountains all over the world, and that was his ambition to climb the Matterhorn, which he did.
And how long does it take? Does it take a day?
Oh no,
it takes days.
It does take days.
One day. I was like, it only takes one day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a day trip.
Yeah. Yeah. But just absolutely awesome, and dominates the scenery there for sure.
Yeah, we're there for my brother's wedding, and it's like, why are you getting married in Vermont? Everyone was asking. But you know, once we got there, everyone stopped asking. They're like, okay.
You have a very active family. It seems that you every time we read something or we talk to you, you're at a family function in some exotic place.
Well, you know, I'm half Italian.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Family is very important, and I love traveling with my family.
Yep.
Except my dad, he brings a little bit too many bags, and his partner, and then, you know.
Yeah.
It's just,
I love the photos. Everybody's got to go to Johnny's website and read the article, because the photos of the wedding and the rehearsal and the bride and groom taking off in the little red carriage were really fun. And
yeah, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. And the videos, Johnny, are getting so much better.
Well, thank you.
I mean, just very professional. I think you're about to change careers here.
Are you still using your still camera, or did you switch over to...
I actually bought a new camera about right before the wedding.
Right.
It's another Nikon. It's a Coolpix. Before, I had a 5200, which was 5.1 pixels.
Right.
Pixels, and this one's 7900, so it's 7.1 megapixels.
Yeah, they're like,
right.
You know...
But now, it's really small.
And you're shooting it in high resolution, I assume.
Yep, and I take videos, just like 30-second videos, and just whatever, or stills.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we
and
did some.
The film looks great.
Yeah, some of the ones we did, the resolution didn't seem quite as good as some of the stuff I've seen you shoot. And I think the camera that Bob was using was about six pixels or megapixels, which is pretty good quality.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, places to stay in Zermatt.
Well, you know, there's a few. It depends how much money you want to stay. We stayed at a great little 3-star hotel called the City Hotel, and it's right. I mean, everything's right there in town. There's like 130 different hotels.
Yeah.
And they're all great. And this is just like a very basic hotel. The desk closes at 10 o'clock at night, so you have to make sure you have your key with you, otherwise you're not getting back inside. And that was only like, you know, they range from $58 to $182 for that one.
Right.
And then my brother was staying at the Monte Rosa, which is the most famous hotel there, probably, because that's been around for like 150 years.
Uh-huh.
And that has... You know, all the famous mountaineers stay there,
yep.
Including Edward Whymper, the guy who was the first one to climb the mountain.
Right.
And then the big time hotel, which I also stayed at, this is a 5-star. This is called the Riffelop, and it's up. It's about 20 minutes up the mountain, and I only stayed there for about for one night.
One night.
You can hear the dogs running around.
That's fun. That's high as what you want to be, and that's probably as long as you want to be there, just one night.
Oh, but the Riffelop, you would want to stay more.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just plush, and they have an amazing spa, like a pool, indoor outdoor pool, and in the spa is downstairs, and it's like a cave, and it's just really, they have all kinds of things, steam room, sauna. It's prime time.
Yeah, yeah. At 7,290 feet above sea level.
You know, and again, I was fine. My breathing, I always get worried about going to high places just because I have asthma, but I had no problems.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't have any. I didn't really have a dry mouth when I woke up, which, you know, I go to New Mexico and I can't even close my mouth when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a difference in the air. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you know, it's so clean there.
Yeah.
There's barely any pollution. There's no cars in Zermatt.
Right.
Car-free village. They only have these electric carts, which fly, and you can't hear them, which is tough. And a few people almost got picked off, including me.
All right. All right. And the...
I got a great restaurant for you there.
You do?
We had a hike to it.
Right.
And in the wintertime, you ski to it. But it's called Chevroni, or Chevroni, but it's spelled C-H-E-Z, and then next word is V-R-O-N-Y. And it's just like in the middle of the hillside with, of course, a gorgeous view of the Matterhorn. And you get there, and it took an hour hike down from Riffelop. And then we had to walk up a little bit, too. And then to walk down, it's like another 45 minutes to Zermatt.
Okay.
But it's just, the food, so good. Fondue, we had fondue. I mean, it was just like, and then even the lady who owned the place yodeled for us. And it was like,
oh, that's what I was about to ask. You had on one of your videos somebody yodeling, and I wondered who it was.
That hotel, that restaurant.
Oh, okay.
He's like, I have a special treat for you, since my brother and his fiance got married. They're like, I want to yodel. We're like, really? And all of a sudden, everyone's just like, that was the highlight of the trip.
Yeah.
I was just looking for Heidi from Swift Best now. And that would have been all set.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I saw the Ricola guys, you know, blowing the horn. I did see some guys blowing those Swiss Alp horns, but
okay.
The Ricola guys.
Right. The Hotel Alex, what was that like?
Oh, you know what? I forgot about the Hotel Alex. We didn't stay there, but we went there one night, and they have a great bar. And we pretty much just took over the whole section. I mean, it's really comfortable. They have fires going. They have, like, cow furniture. Like, some of them are, like, these leather chairs that just look like a cow. And, you know, we're just laying around, and one of the guys who was in the wedding, or at the wedding, he plays the guitar, and he brought his guitar out, and the hotel's like, sure, go ahead. They didn't care. The bartender started singing with us.
Great.
And I don't, you know, I cannot sing. But, I mean, these guys, everyone's just, like, singing these songs that you want to sing. And you know, everyone's taking turns singing. So we're, like, singing Sweet Home Alabama in Switzerland.
Like, bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
Yeah.
I think the Swiss get into American music. I mean, they even down in the islands, they get into the merengue. They love all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, at first the bartender wasn't very cool, and all of a sudden he just like, he was like the coolest ever.
He mellowed out and got into it.
With beers. I think he was drinking with everybody.
Great. Wonderful stuff. What about a webcam for us?
You know what? I have one for Vegas, but you have to go to earthcam.com.
Earthcam.com.
And there's all kinds of them for Vegas.
Right.
You just go right in the front, it'll say Las Vegas. You hit it, and you can see the pool right now, the Hard Rock Hotel.
Huh.
Which, that might keep you busy for a day.
Yeah. So you didn't get one for Switzerland?
I do have one for Switzerland, but for me to give you the URL will take forever.
Oh, okay.
It is really long.
Okay.
If you go on to johnnyjet.com and hit our newsletter.
Yep.
I can send it to you, or you can. You'll see.
It'll pull it up. It'll say it there.
Yeah, last week's.
Last week's newsletter. Okay, and this week, of course, is a great newsletter as well, and we'll have to cover that next time because we're out of time. But Venice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Molto bella.
Yeah, that's your second time to Venice, isn't it?
No, it was my first.
Your first?
But hopefully not my last.
Right.
I can picture Johnny sitting on the back of that gondola singing a song. Johnny, we got to go.
All right, you guys.
Nice chatting with you.
Great talking to you. Take care. Travel safe. Bye now. All right, you're listening to Talking Travel, and
that's always fun.
Yeah, it is. You can always check out our program schedule at www.ttrn.com for the latest guest information. Next week we're going to be airing a pre-recorded show while we're on a short hiatus. So tune in to Talkin' Travel at 11 a.m. next Wednesday on the Travel Talk Radio Network. And this is Marcus, filling on behalf of myself and Roy Lowy, saying bye till next week. And goodbye, Omega Buggy, wherever you are.
Travel Talk Radio Network is brought to you by Travel Talk Radio Network and Talking Travel, broadcast live from Florida Suncoast and 24/7 online at ttrn.com. Now back to our regular network program in progress.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stuff all over the world, and in every port I own a part of at least one lovely girl. I've a pretty senorita waiting for me down in New Mexico. If you're ever in Alaska, stop and see my cute little Eskimo. All my sweet Caroline down in Burlington make my heart start to yearn. And my China doll down in Old Hong Kong wait for my return. Pretty Polynesian baby over the sea. I remember the night when we walked in the sand of Waikiki and I held you so tight.